Thank you, Dr. Perry. It's an honor to be here today. One of the things that being in Davis during this present environmental conditions have done for me is it's reminded me that sometimes it really is good to live at 4,000 foot elevation and above the 45th parallel. And I assume Allison will call me sometime in January and remind me why it's a good thing to live in Davis. For those of you notice the other speakers, I'm somewhat elevationally impaired compared to the other speakers. So for those of you in the back who can't see me, I'll assure you you're not missing anything. With that, I'd like to talk a little bit about heifer development and some. So what are some of the challenges that we have with heifer development? That's a question that engages a response from the audience, okay? So what are some of the problems we have with heifer? What are our challenges with heifer development? What are we trying to do with those heifers? We need to get them bred, right? We need to get them developed in an economical manner. What else do we want those heifers to do for us? Hopefully we want them to stay around in the herd, right? And so let's talk about some things. And what I'm going to do today, because we're limited on time, I'm going to try and focus on some concepts more than data. There'll be some things maybe that we've omitted. There's not a lot of discussion about minerals in this particular talk, but we can visit about those later. And there's several other of the speakers here that can certainly visit with you about some nutritional aspects of heifer development, which is the focus of the talk today. So when we talk about heifers and heifer development, you know, especially in the West, we have to take these heifers from that young growing heifer all the way up to this bred heifer that we have here. And in the West, we have a challenge because we have a variety of environments in which those heifers have to operate and a variety of feedstuffs that we use. So we may be on either pasture that's improved pasture or irrigated pasture. We could be on range. In some parts of the West, we're faced with some pretty harsh winter conditions. And so we have to get those heifers to develop and do so in an economical manner. One of the first concepts that I want to visit with you about is that a pregnant heifer is not the same thing as an early pregnant heifer. That too often we talk about, well, we got 80% of the heifers pregnant, but maybe that was in a 45 or a 60-day breeding season. And when some of the work that Dave referred to earlier is that we've known since the 70s that those heifers that get bred early in the breeding season are the heifers that are the more productive heifers for us. And there was more recently some work from Clay Center, Nebraska, that Dr. Cushman's group put together, which really looked at heifers that became pregnant in the first 21 days or calved in the first 21 days of the calving season versus those that calved 22 to 42 or 43 days. And even in that well-managed herd, and they're Mark II heifers, so they tend to be pretty fertile animals, they saw a distinct advantage to those heifers that calved in the first 21 days of their initial calving season, having a higher retention rate in the herd. If we look down to this lower graph, this is more representative. This was some work that they did with some cooperator herds, and this is probably more representative that most of us see in our herds, in that those heifers that calve in the first 21 days, when we get out here to 4 years of age, we have about 50% of those heifers retained in the herd, where we have less than 30% of the heifers that were the later calving heifers retained in the herd. So not only do we have to get those heifers bred, but we need to get them bred at the front end of the breeding season. And heifers that become pregnant in those first 21 days consistently wean heavier calves throughout the first six lactations in this particular study. So that's one of the concepts. The other thing is we talk about pre-weaning. And normally in the past, when we thought about pre-weaning nutrition of heifers, we really thought, well, you know, we do some selection on the dam side with milk production. If we have opportunity because of the pastures that we have to do some managed intensive grazing or to do some grazing management, if we have some opportunities to do some supplementation on range, which unfortunately in Idaho we can't do because the federal government says you can't supplement when you're out on range. By and large, we saw it, you know, pre-weaning was just kind of what happened. And then we tried to take care of it afterwards by our post-weaning nutritional management. But more and more, what we're finding out is this pre-weaning period, much like the information Dr. Funson's going to give you in a minute about the prenatal period, has a dramatic effect on the reproductive abilities of these heifers. So some of the older data just came from the fact that we knew that heifers that grew faster during that pre-weaning period or were heavier at weaning were the heifers that came into heat first. They were the heifers that became puberal. And so then one of the things that we did as managers was we tended to select those faster-growing, heavier heifers at weaning time and put those and retain those as replacements, but at the same time, then that tended to have us select larger heifers all at the same time. More recently, there's been some information that came out of Texas A&M that kind of indicated to us that maybe that 4 month to 7 month of age period is a very critical period in terms of nutritional management of the heifer, in the fact that what the heifer sees in terms of nutrition during that period of time can set up things for the rest of her life in terms of her fertility and her ability to cycle at an early age. Some of the other things that have told us about the critical nature of this period is some work that was done on early weaning, and some of that work was looking at early weaning as a way to increase reproductive efficiency in young cows. So by taking that heifer away at about 90 days of age, we can increase the fertility in young lactating cow. Some of it was in response to drought. But in these studies, when they compared the early weaned heifers, and these heifers then were put on some higher energy, higher starch diets very early in their life, compared to their normal weaned counterparts, they found that in several of the studies, those heifers that received more energy early on in their life had higher pregnancy rates as heifers. And so that's another thing that indicates to us that this pre-weaning period is a critical time period in the life of the heifer. One of the drawbacks, though, about getting heifers to grow too fast too soon is that we end up with a precocious puberty. And so therefore we have heifers that are cycling at maybe 6 months of age, 7 months of age, and therefore, depending on our management system, may be in danger of becoming pregnant at a very, very early age. This particular study just showed that in two different years with higher rates of gain, more of those heifers exhibited precocious puberty. The other thing that happens with these heifers that exhibit precocious puberty is usually sometime during the winter or sometime during the time between weaning and breeding, they'll shut back down and stop cycling. And those heifers are not necessarily the ones that start cycling again at the next opportunity. So even though we see a lot of precocious puberty, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to translate into a good thing for us. But the concept that we want to really focus on right now is that the pre-weaning nutritional management is something we need to think about. We need to watch what the drought situations are doing. We need to watch how fast those heifers are growing and make some decisions to what to do with those heifers. Then the post-weaning phase is one that we probably have a lot of knowledge about. You guys are probably very familiar with a lot of the things that I'll talk about here very rapidly during this segment. Some of the old work that we looked at, and Rick, maybe we need to go back and look at this 1 pound a day gain heifers when we talk about things. But the initial study was looking at heifers from weaning until breeding that either gained a half a pound or a pound and a half. Those heifers came in to heat at about 13, 14, or 15 months of age. The heifers that were growing at a better rate had better reproductive rates. This is old data, so these are pretty small cattle. And they had a higher overall pregnancy rate during the breeding season. And so that kind of led to the recommendations that you all are used to hearing, is that heifers should gain about a pound and a quarter to a pound and three quarters a day from breeding and from weaning until breeding in order to be ready for becoming pregnant. The other thing from a management standpoint that probably don't do enough of is separating heifers into weight groups when we develop them. And so simply what they did was any heifer that was at average weaning weight or above became the heavy group. If you were lighter than the average, then you were in the light group. And they looked at either feeding them all together, so all the heifers together, or splitting them off into a light group that was fed separately and given a different diet than the heavy group that was fed separately and given a different diet. And in both cases, by feeding those heifers separately, what we've done is improved the pregnancy rate in those heifers. We fed the light heifers the amount that they needed, and they didn't have to compete with the heavy heifers. We probably avoided overfeeding the large heifers, and so we reduced the feed cost in that way. The other thing that's been of interest is, what about the pattern of gain? Certainly there are times where feed is more available or the weather conditions are more favorable in order that heifers can gain a lot of weight in a very economical fashion. And so most of these studies compared some sort of even gain, which meant if the target was a pound and a half a day from weaning to breeding, that's pretty much what those heifers did every day, compared to either holding those heifers back and then pushing them very fast close to breeding, getting them to gain very rapidly and then coasting them into breeding, or what the dairy industry tends to do now, which is some sort of stair-step feeding, where they slow them down at different phases during the development process. In the dairy industry, that's to avoid over-deposition of adipose tissue in the mammary gland. The take-home message from all these studies is, regardless of how the heifers got to their end point, their reproductive efficiency was about the same. So we've got some latitude in how we manage those heifers. Do we feed them to grow slowly at first and take advantage of some cheap feeds early on, and then when forage becomes more available, have them grow more rapidly? And this is more illustrated graphically in this study by Lynch, which there's two things I want to emphasize here. First, in this year one, they had a shorter time period, only about 45 days or 40 days, for these late gain heifers to catch up. And they really never did catch up in terms of weight to their even gain counterparts. But when they gave those heifers a little more time to gain, then they caught up. And so the concept there is, if we're doing this kind of pattern of gain, which is very typical now in heifer development, we need to ensure that we have enough time from when we start feeding those heifers for a higher rate of gain until the start of the breeding season in order for those heifers to catch up and become properly developed. What results is we see a decrease in feed costs by using this kind of slow gain, rapid gain scenario, but we have similar cyclic and pregnancy rates in those heifers. So one of the things that we've talked about, and it's covered in detail in your handout or in the proceedings, but we're not going to talk a lot about it today, is a lot of us have spent a good deal of our career looking at if there is some sort of magic, is there a nutrient that's most essential to reproduction? And if we could identify that nutrient, can then we alter heifer diets in order to increase reproductive efficiency? And the short story is we've looked at a lot of different things, by whether it's increasing carbohydrates, increasing fats, changing the amount of bypass protein in the diet. And really what we see is occasionally we'll find a study where we see a benefit, but in most cases we don't see a consistent benefit across locations and across different studies. And so there is, at this point, no nutrient that's been identified. On the other hand, what we have confirmed is that if we get an opportunity to use a lot of a certain byproduct, let's say distiller's grains, or we're adding additional fat into the diets, there's no reproductive harm to do that. And in some cases, there might be actually a reproductive advantage, but not sufficient of reproductive advantage that we can recommend that on a regular basis. One of the things that has been reported recently and is of interest to us that use a lot of range country is that heifers that received 50% of their protein requirement in the form of a bypass protein or a rumen undegradable protein, when compared to heifers that either received 36% of their protein requirement as undegradable protein, or dry lot heifers, which probably had about 10% of their protein as undegradable protein, those heifers, when they were developed, so between weaning and breeding, when they received half of their protein as bypass protein, those heifers actually stayed in the herd longer at a higher percentage than heifers that didn't. So again, we're getting some more indication and more information that how we treat these heifers between breeding and weaning and breeding may have long-term ramifications on those heifers in terms of productivity. So, but kind of to summarize the nutrient data, there's really no magic bullet for us at this point that we can go back in if we've got heifers that have been undernourished or heifers that have not been developed properly, and we can save the day. There are some other things that Dr. Perry will talk about in the future, and probably Dr. Funston as well, where if we see large-scale nutritional shifts either immediately before or immediately after AI, we can see some decreases in pregnancy rates. And I won't go into the details on that, but the concept is we need to keep those heifers on a pretty steady nutritional plane, both pre and post AI. And then some previous experience with grazing situations and forage types might improve reproductive efficiency. So if those heifers have had prior experience with grazing a particular environment, whether it be corn stalks or whether it be range country, then we see those heifers being more reproductively sound. Some things that we've talked about, reproductive tract scoring, ionophores I haven't talked about a lot, but inclusion of ionophores in heifer diets results in improved feed efficiency as well as lowering age at puberty. We've talked extensively about using progestins. We're going to talk in a minute about target weights. And we want to avoid any use of anabolic implants in heifers. There's a lot of variation in information, but the bottom line is we don't want to implant heifers. Not as big a concern in this country as perhaps in Australia, but some of our forages do contain high levels of phytoestrogens or plant-based estrogens, alfalfa being one of those. So if we are grazing heifers on a pretty straight alfalfa diet, we may run into some problems with reproduction in those heifers. And we can talk about those later at question time. So the concept here is we've got an extreme amount of flexibility in terms of how we feed heifers, what we feed heifers during that post-weaning period in order to get them to where we want them to be. And now what I'd like to kind of finish up with is the target weight debate. I put this in because this is David's favorite slide. This is the Dave Patterson's favorite slide. These are the suits, okay, that are the 65%. This is Dr. Cora and Dr. Patterson versus the business casual people, Dr. Funston and Dr. Roberts, that have proposed a little lower target weight. So you know for many years 65% has been the proposed target weight, and there's been some recent research looking at lowering this target weight may have some advantages. They put the stupid guy from Idaho in the middle of this whole concept to talk to you about it, okay? So why did we end up with this 65% target weight? And without going into a lot of detail about this particular study, what 65% did for us in a variety of studies that we've looked at is across both lightweight and heavyweight heifers and across heifers of a variety of breed types, whether there be some indicus in there or there be a lot of continental breeding, we see that 65% gives of a target weight, so having heifers be at 65% of the mature weight by the start of the breeding season resulted in very positive pregnancy rates in those heifers, consistent across environments, consistent across breeds. The other thing is, sometimes these heifers that were developed to a lower target weight had problems with dystocia later on, and that may relate to how they were handled after that development period or after breeding. And some of these large-framed heifers that were held to a 55% target weight just had poor reproduction because we weren't getting those heifers big enough for their mature size. And then if we look back at the work that we referred to earlier, if we severely restrict these heifers during that post-weaning period, not only do we maybe not get as many heifers bred, but greater percentage of those heifers have problems maintaining pregnancies. And so that was kind of the basis for the 65. There's a lot of pro and cons, and those are in your handout as well. And so there's a little bit of forgiveness in the system because we have that 65 in there. Now, Dr. Funston and some others started looking at, well, what if we looked at 60 or 60%, 65% compared to about a 55%? This particular study had 53 versus 58, but the concept is the same. And so what he saw was that even though if we developed heifers to a lower percentage of mature weight by the start of the breeding season, might have a few less heifers cycling by the start of the breeding season, but at the end of the breeding season, pregnancy rates were not different in these heifers that were developed to a lower target weight. And in addition to that, it reduced feed costs significantly. And, of course, this was back in 2004, and with feed costs increasing, that advantage per pregnant heifer would probably be greater. So there's some advantage to thinking of doing that, especially from a commercial standpoint. One of the key things about the 55% system is after the start of the breeding season, those heifers that were developed to a 55% target weight need to continue to gain weight at a more rapid rate than the heifers that were targeted at 65%, so that they're gaining weight at a more rapid fashion during the breeding season, also continue to gain weight so that by the time they calve, they still have reached that 90% of mature weight target weight in order to not have problems with dystocia and not have problems breeding back. But still, by doing this, they lowered the cost of producing those heifers and did not impair longevity in those cattle at all. So people are always worried about, if I switch things, am I going to end up with a train wreck? And so there are some cautions with the 55%, that big thing about the heifers must gain weight during and after the breeding season. And if we get too far below 55%, then we see some problems with calf weaning weight and delayed conception as three-year-olds. But that's if you go below that 55. So you have to be careful that you're accurate in your estimations. The other thing that's been a little bit of concern as I look through the literature is this is just happens to be one study by Andy Roberts out in Miles City, and he looked at these restricted versus control heifers. The restricted then were like a 55% weight, and the controls were more of a 65% weight. And some years, no difference in AI pregnancy rate. In other years, a significant difference in AI pregnancy rate. So one of the things that if we look across the literature, even though some of these studies used AI, the AI success rate hasn't been reported as much as the percentage of heifers calving in the first 21 days. And so when they looked at these 55% studies versus 65%, what they see is a similar percentage of heifers calving in the first 21 days, but it's not well reported whether they calve to AI or they calve to natural service that happened afterwards. So again, some pros and cons that are in your handout. And then to kind of finish up, if we look at these factors for selecting the target weight, if you're a situation where you probably have a limited number of cows, you've got some larger frame, later maturing breeds, or you're purebred or straightbred individuals, then probably 65% may be the way you want to go or consider that. If you're a crossbred herd with early maturing breeds and they're moderate frame cows, if you've got a large herd, therefore you have a lot of heifers that you can pick from for replacements and that you live in a limited resource environment, then 55% might be the way to go. So kind of to wrap up here in the last couple minutes, to summarize, we need to select those early born replacements because those early heifers are come out of fertile cows. We need to monitor a pre-weaning environment, and probably that's a change for a lot of us to try and think of ahead and say, if we get in a drought situation, maybe we need to early wean those heifers in order to ensure reproductive success. And I think Dr. Shelagardis will talk more about that as in his presentation. We need to choose target weight that's right for your operation. So look at the pros and cons to the different target weights. Think about your operation. Think about your goals. And then choose that target weight that fits your particular operation. And then once you've chosen that target weight, develop a post-weaning nutritional plan that's based on feedstuffs that are available to you, a rate of gain that works, and a pattern of gain that works for your operation. And then feed for the cow environment. I think in the past, a lot of times, especially in the West, heifers get weaned, they get shoved in a dry lot, they get fed sometimes some high concentrate diets, and then we kick them out as two-year-olds and say, there you go, girls, there's the range, knock yourselves out, better come back in pregnant with a 500-pound plus calf at side, right? And so sometimes I think the heifer development things, we need to put that heifer in that cow environment and make her perform, and then use the reproductive technologies that we've talked about today. So with that, I'll be glad to take questions. I think I only have a couple minutes, and I'll be glad have been honored to be here today. Thank you very much.